I met this person not too long ago. It's very short in my lifetime. Within the last 3-4 months, I would assume. I can't remember exactly. But it seems like I've gotten to know her. Just her personality just bubbles and just invites you in. And she's an absolutely wonderful person. But more than that, she's been attending the 164 group regularly, and I get to hear her speak. And I get to hear little parts of wisdom and pearls and droplets here and there. And I got to say that I agree with about 90% of it. I think she's at, but let me tell you, a dynamo, ball of energy, someone who looks like they're filled with life and love, especially guidance through a higher power. There are very few that just exuberate this type of, that produce this energy. And I asked her to speak, and she says, yeah, whatever. And what day would you like to speak? You pick it. You know, that's the type person she is. And I just can't wait to hear her story. And I introduce to you. Yeah, I introduce to you Miss Ruthie R.
My name is Ruthie Rosello, and I am a member of Alcoholics Anonymous in good standing.
Hey, Ruthie.
And I'm proud to be an alcoholic in recovery. I'm blessed to be an alcoholic in recovery, as well as an addict. My story has both. I want you to indulge me. I want everybody to stand up. Come on. Just indulge me. Don't be a doubting Thomas, okay? Just, we're in a safe place. I'm going to tell you everything there is to know about me, right? So I want you to help me. Okay? So we're going to play a game called If You're Like Me. So I'm going to say a couple of things. If it fits you, I want you to sit down. Okay? If you're like me, when you drank, you woke up wondering where the hell you were.
Done.
Need I say more?
Yeah.
I'm not unique. I'm not unique. And I'll get you before it's all said and done. That's okay. When we look at the first step, it was important for me to belong. Because the first step tells me that we admitted we were alcoholic and that our life has become unmanageable, that our lives. So everything that I'm going to share with you is old hat for most of you, because we're alike, okay? But I share my story, and I'm gonna give a real quick as it was, because my life is filled with love and magic and wonderful friends that sit before me tonight, people that know me, to know the real Ruthie, the playful Ruthie, the very passionate Ruthie in recovery. But the Ruthie that surfaced in 1957, her mom was an aspiring actress, dancer, and singer. She had a hell of a career heading in her direction, and she met my father, a merchant marine, who had just come from Spain to the United States. They met in New York, got married. She had 3 children, Tanya being the eldest, Ruthie being the second, that'd be me, and Myra being the youngest, all a year apart. All of my mother's dreams went down the toilet in a New York second, and I say it like this in hindsight because I've done a lot of work as a result of the hate that I had for my mother. It ate my spirit so much that there was no goodness in my heart at all. I was raised in abuse, physical abuse, and 2 years old, I was in a hospital for 2 years connecting my jaw. I was thrown in a bathtub connecting my jaw to my head, which was split wide open at Tampa General. I still don't like that beep, beep, beep when I go to the hospitals because I remember it really well. Later on, she decided to reopen my head when I was 13. I was the poster child for abuse and also incest. I got to do the daily chore for my grandfather of a sexual nature. And I was told it was a chore. And as children go, you know, we do what we're told. And we don't question. And in youth, there was no reason to question it because I trusted my mother, who walked me into my grandfather's room, until I got in school and learned different. I was humiliated in school because my classmates, you know how we are when we're in school and we talk about those things called penises. And they were talking about how they had never seen one, and well, I knew what it looked like. So I wanted to inform my peer group that I knew. And they were devastated, and they were horrified, and they just ran away from me, and I didn't understand. I only understood that the information I was giving was not good. I was sad. And I became crudely aware that the behavior that I was doing was not acceptable. So what does a youngster such as myself, full of piss and vinegar, do? I decided to take care of my grandfather in a hurtful way so that I would never have to do that chore again. But see, in hindsight, it's really interesting because then he chose my older sister, and I begged my grandfather to please take me back so that my sister would be spared. So imagine, if you will, having to beg to do an illicit act back. I don't think that I was raised very straight-laced, shall we say. I don't think I had a mommy and daddy of Leave It to Beaver fashion. My father is alive. He illiterate, he doesn't read or write. So my father chose the way of the underworld. He got involved, he was a Jailista in the beginning when he came to this country, which is a Jailai player. So we used to, as children, watch my dad play Jailai and with all his mistresses. We got to meet them all, several. But I was proud of my father because he was quite the ladies' man and he was well-liked, and that's all I saw. The women loved him. It didn't dawn on me that he was cheating on my mother. You know, it just, he was real personable. So, well, right, okay, you know, I mean, I grew up kind of whacked, so I got whacked ideas and belief systems as a result of my rearing, and you get it. So Daddy decided that since he couldn't make money legally, he met some guys, and my dad always had money, and I stole a lot out of it, because hell, when you got a wad like that, it's a few 20s out of the bar, you know? But, and it wasn't clean money, right? So I justified my stealing my dad's money because it was dirty money. So what was he gonna do to me? Tell on me? Go ahead, Dad, tell me. But anyway, so that's my bringing up ins is about learning how to make good grades, because if I made good grades, my mother would take me to school saying I was an idiot and that I was incapable of learning. So I had to learn how to make bad grades. That's not very easy to do when you're as smart as me. And I was smart. So I made bad grades, and she was happy with that. My mother didn't want me to excel at all, and I found out later on in years that it was mainly because I looked identical to my father, and when they divorced, I was the whipping post from hell. She could not look at me and not see my father. My mother had mental illness as well, which I have today. I don't know if it's a result of the trauma that I've undergone or that I'm just mentally ill too. I think it's both, but anyway. So home, that's it for the home life. I'm done with the home life. I did go to track and field. I did decide that I make enough money going into the little boys' gymnasium and giving blowjobs so that I can make money to pay my sisters to keep their mouths shut so that I could do track and field, because I loved track and field. It was my freedom. Those hurdles, every hurdle I jumped, it was like a mile away from my mother. You know, just further away from my mother. Each hurdle I came to, it was my mother, and I was going to jump over it. My obsession for my mother's demise became very, very, very obsessive compulsive. it accelerated when I found beer, warm beer, in the ditch with my friends, and I started drinking warm beer, and I got a feeling of comfort and ease. I was numb. I didn't care what happened, who it happened to. I was just whatever kind of gal. And I found something that made me feel that way. And I was on. So I started drinking when I was in junior high in the ditch with the children. And the smokers, you know, the bad seated ones. I even got a letter, a note, and forged it so I can get to be with the bad children. Kind of cool, huh? And Mom didn't care anyway. She didn't want me to excel, so why not join them? So that's what I did. And then we got to drink liquor, peach brandy. Warm peach brandy. Oh my God, it was good. And that took me to places even further. So much so that I devised a plan on how to kill my mother. I dug the hole in the backyard. It took me 3.5 weeks. Way in the corner where nobody could see it. And the machete that was in the shed, that was the tool. And I was going to get rid of her one night. And I remember, it's kind of like a Friday the 13th, but I walked in there with this machete, and on her long bureau was a picture of my mother and my two sisters on one end, and me and Fido on the end. And I thought, damn. I kid you not. And this is how wicked my brain is. I thought, you know what? I'm the problem. If I kill this woman, my two sisters, who she treated exemplary, wouldn't have a mom. I'm like the dog. And like the dog, I'll just run away. So I got my little knapsack, you know how we do when we're kids, and we pack all our little incidentals. Fuck food, you know. Let's put on our favorite t-shirt, you know, the little bling bling that our uncles and stuff had given me, right? And we'll go running away to town and country. That was far for a 16-year-old who had never been anywhere because my mother had us in a 5-mile radius. We did everything with her. We were confined to her. So town and country was quite a big piece for me. I was proud of myself, actually, until I got lost. And it was getting cold. So I broke into a shed and slept for the night and was awakened by a German shepherd's breath. And I was like, what? Back then, if you didn't look old enough, they'd ask you, you know, hon, where do you belong? And I looked at him when he said that, and I said, I don't. I don't belong. And then I thought, my dad. I'll go live with my dad, because they had divorced. My dad will come get me. He'll fix everything. And he did. He honestly came in his white Lincoln. My dad always had a Lincoln. He swore by Lincolns. And he brought me a donut and a carton of milk, and I thought I was in hog heaven. And I moved in with my father. Of course, we had to go by the bitch's house and get my stuff. And that I was like spasming because I didn't want to go anywhere near there. And he got my stuff, and she said, "She'll be the death of you. That woman's crazy." Well, she was very true. I was crazy. She found the ditch, of course, the hole that I had dug for her. So, you know, I guess it was personal to her.
How deep was it?
How deep is the ocean? It wasn't ever going to be deep enough. It wasn't ever going to be deep enough. And what I will say is when I moved in with my dad, I had already acquired rage. And anger, despondency, lack of trust, okay? I trusted no one. So when I met my stepmother, who was like Tinkerbell gone wrong, I mean, she was the epitome of something out of a fairy tale. She was pleasant. She was sweet. She wanted to be my friend. Well, I was already drinking. I didn't want to be her friend. I didn't want anything from her except to be left the hell alone. So I did my antics, and my dad found pot on me, and, "You're gonna tell me who gave that to you?" And I'm looking at my dad going, "Why? Do you want to sell me yours?" Yeah, I was pissed. Because, you know, you're gonna tell me I can't smoke pot and you sell dope? What kind of lesson is that, really? So he hit me in my mouth, and I had braces, which he provided me. He was a good provider. And my mouth is all, "Look what you made me do. Look what you made me do." Why do parents do that? They're so victim, you know? They're so martyristic. "If I didn't have you, my life would be great." Well, I didn't ask to be born, you know? This was the kind of reinforcements I got. These are the kind of warm fuzzies I got from my parents. You know, they just make you want to go, "Ooh, thank you." Well, I decided to move out of Daddy's house and do it on my own. Because you know what? They weren't doing a good job anyway. I got raped in between trying to do it my way several times. I married the man that raped me. Now, some of you might be asking yourselves, why would you do that? Well, because if you hit me, you loved me, right? So this guy took advantage of me. He must love me. So let's get married. Made perfect sense to me, and we got married. It lasted 2.5 years before I thought about digging a ditch for him, too. But I divorced him. I did it legal.
Without my information.
No, it's okay. I mean, you know, feedback is good. We're gonna move fast forward now to 1989, because the drinking progressed, as we all know. We wind up in jail. What the fuck? Darby. We do behavior to get more, which means that my integrity, which was already down the toilet anyway, and I already produced certain acts, we'll take it a little further. Who cares? Now I can make money, thank you very much. And then I got to beat up men for a living, which was so cool, because I had had it with men. Here was an opportunity to make money and beat them up because they wanted to be beat up. And I got $1,500 for doing that. And I had a whole closet full of good, cool stuff. And since I hated guys, it fit the bill perfectly until, and this is way before God, God has intervened. He intervened with the dresser. He intervened with this because I met a guy with one arm that I genuinely liked. And I couldn't do it. And I said, "You know what? I got a girlfriend I want to introduce you to. And I want you to take this $1,500. And I want you to show her a good time. And if you don't, I'll beat the fuck out of you then." And, you know, when I said something, people took it to heart. Well, you know, they're married. They got married. They got married. And the anger that I had in my spirit for men, that man with the one arm took away. Therapeutic, I think. Perhaps not the way that we normally do things, but remember, I'm not normal. But it was very therapeutic because I learned to appreciate men. I learned that men were more than just people to give you your money. That they had feelings and that they had ideas. And that they love to be protectors. You guys love, you love it. You love it when a woman is not having a good day and they put their head right on that shoulder. You melt like butter. And I love that about you guys. You know? And when a woman needs you to come to her rescue, your feathers come out to here and you're just filled with pride. And I love that about men. We need you guys. I'm a lesbian, but we still need you guys. So the marriage didn't work, so what does Ruthie do? She finds out, she's trying to get therapy along the way because she knows she's whacked. I'm whacked. Something's seriously wrong here. And I went to a counselor who said, "We need to put you under hypnosis. And we're going to find out what deep is it? I said, how more deep can it get? I mean, how much more crap do you want me to expel to you? It's dreadful enough, isn't it? Well, the reason that she put me under hypnosis was because I couldn't be with men. Physically. And I found out why under hypnosis. My mother had done the most atrocious thing you could ever do to a human being, and that's take away her femininity. And I say that because the only choice that I had to have a purposeful relationship was in the gay community. I was not born gay. You know, I just was, but it was an out for me because I wasn't going to be a nun because I cursed like a sailor and no nun would have me. I mean, let's face it. So I chose the gay life. And it was difficult because I didn't fit there either. So the drinking got more progressed. Because I didn't fit in the heterosexual world, and I didn't fit in the gay world. I just didn't fit. The gay people didn't want to be with me because I talked to you guys. The guys wanted to take me out, and I didn't want to go out with them. So I started drinking. I said, well, you know what? If I drink some more, you know, it won't matter. So I drank, what? Did I say something wrong?
No, you're good.
If I'm offensive?
No, you're good, you're good.
I'm sorry. It is my story. And I don't pull punches when I tell my story. And if it gets too hard, please, if you leave, that you won't hurt my feelings.
No, it's not you. All right. At all. She's just shy.
I'm telling you to be quiet.
Okay, so anyway, I don't know of an alcoholic who's shy, but whatever. We weren't shy when we were drinking, I know that. So I went to a gay lifestyle, and that didn't work too well. I had a few relationships. I was good in certain areas and lousy in others. But the bottle never failed me, so we became best buddies. And I became a recluse, and I drank by myself. And I worked hard, and I drank, and I worked hard, and I drank. And in between some of the drinking, because I would black out, I'd wind up swimming, and I don't swim. So I got arrested one time for jumping off the bridge and swimming. That's not funny, because if you don't swim, how in the hell I didn't drown, I don't know. That was traumatic. That's trauma, girl. And I did things like that, you know, just stupid. I'd get tattoos and wake up the next day and it's like, where the fuck did that come from? Well, it's not ugly. Well, it's okay, it's okay. I mean, you know, we do strange things when we're drinking. And then we justify it by saying it's not that bad. Not that bad, it could be worse. In 1989, I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous for the first time. By the way, my surrender date, when I let God decide to take over and run the show, is March 17th, 2005. In 1989, I came into the rooms. Because I was done. I didn't know what I was done with. I do. I was done living. And I had a tent in the back of Sobrenity. And I don't know how many of you old know the old Sobrenity with the swamps in the back or whatever. And I would look at people with coffee and cigarettes. Now, if you're an alcoholic and an addict like me, that's a good combination right there. So I would come in, get coffee, cigarettes. I kind of liked what I saw. I didn't understand what I was looking at, but I kind of liked what I saw because you know what? They were laughing. They were saying some really heavy-duty stuff. None of it, of course, applied to me. I had not reached that far down the scale yet. Really didn't. I didn't think I had. I mean, I had it all together. I had my little cave all fixed up with my little clothes all nice and neat. Anyway, I had it going on. I stayed without liquor for 5 years. And something was wrong. I was without liquor for 5 years, but nothing was changing. I still had my wicked ideas. I still had the lack of trust. I still didn't have a sponsor. I certainly wasn't reading the big book or the blue book or the green book or whatever book I was supposed to be reading. I did have a sponsor towards the middle of my 5 years. As a matter of fact, I had 13 altogether. Because I knew more than they did. Really, I did. And if you lived my life, if you only understood, well, they did, and I didn't. So I picked up a much heavy-dutier, since I was arrogant and thought, well, I'm not going to drink. I'll just find something else. And I did. And I think I found the demon drug. And I'm not going to even name the demon drug because it's that horrific for me. It took me to places that I'd never thought I'd go. And I had done a lot of stuff, okay? But I mean, this was horrible. It's the kind of thing that you can't live with it and you can't live without it. And alcohol really didn't do that for me. I had some control with alcohol. I only blacked out. And then when I blanked out, it didn't matter. But up to that point, I had control. 13 years of this substance wore me out. In 2005, I made a phone call to my probation officer and said, you know what? You've never drug tested me. I think you should have. I'm out of control. I'm a crack addict. I have all of it here. I have everything here. Please come get me. I want to hurt myself. Ruthie? Is that you, Ruthie? I said, and I'm spasming. I don't know if anybody's ever done that drug, but when you do too much, you're like, you do all kinds of wacky things and can't control. Ugh, it's horrible. So they came to get me in the little paddy wagon. The guys were really nice. They let me smoke, and they go, God, we wish all addicts were like you. Wanting to do something. And I did. I was done. And I remember praying to God when I was in jail. Thank you for keeping me safe. And everybody in the cell thought I was whacked because I wanted to be safe. And I did the drug treatment program in jail because I wanted to understand what I had done to myself. And I did. And they let me out at 11 o'clock in the morning when I was all said and done, which is about almost a year and a half in jail doing this process. And I walked from Orient Road Jail to the halfway house on Nebraska and 12th, which was going to be my new home. And all I could say was, God, grant me the serenity. God, grant me the serenity. I couldn't even get any further. And I just looked at the pavement and kept walking. And the guys drove up in their cars, don't you know, to assist me. And I said, no, thank you. And I guess I got that kind of look on my face that people get scared of me. And I don't know why that is, because I'm a very lovable woman. But people get scared of me for some reason. So, I start my recovery. I'm scared to death to go out the door because everything reminds me of my substance. Everything, the music, the money. I had to get a Zippo lighter rather than a Bic lighter. Just so that I didn't have to use that stupid thing. And I ventured out to my meetings, and then I'd go back into the halfway house. I wound up, she's not here tonight, but I wound up painting inside and out 3 homes for her. For service work, for payment of the rent, because I didn't have money. She let me do that, and I'll be forever grateful for that. But as I grew, I got a sponsor. Her name was Milo. And she gave me courage when I had no courage. And she made me look at things the way they really are meant to look at. I don't know how many of you are really willing to say what you are, but I was a manipulator, a horrible manipulator. And I picked on the weak, the ones that didn't believe in themselves, you know, the losers. But and I was the biggest loser. But I had to own that. I had to own to every house that I went into that I was a thief. And if they didn't take away that pretty thing off the table, a tip, a lip. If they didn't take what that beautiful item on the table that I was going to steal it. And they looked at me and they go, are you serious? And I go, yes, ma'am. Because if I don't tell you that I want that, I'm going to take it and I need to own that I'm a thief. And I didn't want to do that, but if I wanted to get better, I had to. I had to change behaviors. I had to ask you for help instead of saying, I got it. Don't worry about it. I got it. I had to look at you and say, I don't know what the hell I'm doing. I don't know how to live this life. I never have. I've survived. And you all taught me how to make my bed and get a job and make commitments to people. Y'all like that C word, commitment? It's a good word. Oh, it's a good word. Because it gave me integrity. When I committed to be at a meeting, it gave me integrity. When I committed to I commit to a lot of things. People will tell you that I'm very responsible today. Hi, Noreen. People will tell you sometimes I go above and beyond the call of duty because I'm so freaking grateful to be sucking air in a manner that has eluded me for years. There's nothing I won't do for AA. There's nothing I won't do for the common man who's ailing. You don't have to be an AA. I did help the little old lady who had the cart out in the middle of Florida Avenue. She couldn't, and I got out of, I don't know if I recommend this, but I got out of my car in the middle of traffic with my car on park to help this lady because nobody would help her. I didn't care that the traffic was there. I could have gotten a ticket for that, I'm sure, in hindsight, but it didn't matter. She meant more. People mean more than I mean to me. How could that come from a hustler who used you for everything you owned and now you matter to me? How did that happen? Oh, I think they call that a psychic change. When we change the behaviors and the attitudes, we become completely, totally different people. I am. I have to pinch myself. Is that you? You did what? Do you get that sometimes when you do your good works? It's just like, and then you can't say it. Can't tell nobody. I love it, the people that come in here and they go, oh, I do service work all over the place, la, 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 la. And it's like, well, damn, ain't you humble? Well, I'm sorry. The act of kindness, small acts of kindness means that you shut the fuck up and the gift is watching the beauty, is watching them smile. It ain't about me at all. You know, I could have said, this is my sobriety date. I have a sponsor who has a sponsor, and I've got sponsor. But you know what? We're supposed to have sponsors. Because how else are we going to know how to do this stuff? I couldn't figure it out, and I'm a smart one, okay? So we get a little sponsor who's done the deal, who's living because they live. They have a home, they got a family, 2.2 dogs. They're happy. They get through situations that I used to scratch my head and my ass, go, really? I went to a funeral. 86-year-old lady. I knew her for 7 years, as long as I've been sober, Miss Mayo. And I cried. And I'm going to miss her. Because she is the epitome of a Christian woman. I never knew what Christianity was until I met this woman. She never spoke. I would even try to get her to speak bad about somebody. You know how we try to egg them on? Nothing. Gosh, she taught me how to garden. I garden. I love flowers. I love flowers. Pansies are my favorite. No, sure. Anyway. And then, if you're really lucky in AA, and you do your work, you're working, and you're getting awareness. Hopefully, when you get that awareness, you're doing some freaking practical application. Well, I'm aware that I'm slothful. Okay. What are you going to do about it? Think about it later. No, if you're a slothful idiot like I was, you get up and you do something now. Well, why not later? Because that's what you know how to do, is later. So, Mr. Ricardo over there will tell you how slothful I am. So will Miss Diane over here. There's not a slothful bone in my body. I'm changed. It matters. Making your bed in the morning matters. Your poor bed wants to be fresh. It's true. And looking at myself every morning and saying, you know what, Ruthie? You're not half bad. Matters. Because I can never look at myself in the mirror. And I am so beautiful today. God loves me. And the men and women of Alcoholics Anonymous continue to love me despite my best thinking. Because I still have issues. You know, I'm 55 years old. If you figure, do the math, I've only been around here free for 7 years. That's a lot of dramage. You know what I'm saying? And Drano is necessary, yes. So I continue to washy-washy my brain and expand my horizons and remain teachable, damn it. I don't know. I begin to believe. You know how powerful believing is as opposed to knowing? Knowledge, you what? You have a conversation and it's out the window. But if I stand firm in a belief, that's long-lasting. That means something. I believe today. And I didn't used to believe anything. I believe in miracles. Sounds like a church. I believe. But I do. I get fired up when I talk about God, because the innocent prayers that we pray, it doesn't have to be elaborate. It has to come from genuineness and sincerity. That's what I was taught. If you want to have a personal relationship with the God of your understanding, go to Him real and genuine. You don't have to have perfect prayers, perfect diction. The first time I tried praying to God, it was the ceiling tiles. God, you're up there somewhere. Hear me now. You know, and that's where I thought He was, beyond the ceiling tiles. And today it's much more personal. And I do give Him time because He gave me my life. Take it easy. Little by slow. My process has been little by slow. I won't win any ribbons for the AA Queen of the Year. But you know what? I'm pretty saintly. I mean, think about it. Think about it. I haven't had a ticket in I don't know how many years. I haven't gone to jail in 7. Okay? I drive legally with insurance. Who would have thunk? You know? And I pay it on time. Who would have thunk? I pay my rent on time. Who would have thunk? Sometimes I give money away. Who would have frickin' thunk that? I don't know, man. This program is absolutely flawless. And I don't know what this $5 is, ma'am. But if you would like to donate it to AA, I'll put it in the basket.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Yes. And,
okay. And thank you for letting me share. I'm done.
Ruthie. All right.